With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Coach Unplugged is brought to you by great people over at TeachHoops.com. For coaches who want to get better. From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. Here is your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged, episode 280. Today, we're going to be talking to a Teach Hoops member. But before we get to that, I want to give a big shout out to Dr. Dish. Go over and check him out. We'll have a link down in the show notes. The most versatile shooting machine on the market, period. End of sentence. Done. Go down. If you're thinking of buying one, let me know. I can answer any questions and also mention Coach Unplugged, and you'll get $300 off your next purchase. Seems like a good deal to me. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. 14-day free trial. Seems like a great deal, at least for me. Allows us to bring the things that hopefully help you make a better coach. And one other thing is down the show notes, I just made a t-shirt that I think I'm really proud of. There's lots of different options. I'm working on colors and all those kind of things at this point. But, it's a pitch. It says earned, not given. And it's got a ring in the middle, which is true. I always tell my guys, you can't buy a championship at Target. You got to go and earn it. So if you're interested, want to give back a little bit, try to do the shirt too. Anyway, we're going to go off to a Teach Hoops member, one of our one-on-one calls, to kind of pull back that curtain, let you see what you get as it being a Teach Hoops member. So let's get off to the member call. Can you hear me?
Oh, I think I got
it. You got
it?
Yeah,
I sure can.
Okay.
Excellent. This was easy.
Yeah. Awesome. Let me get my piece of paper. How are you?
Bucks. I'm doing okay.
Bucks don't play tonight. They play tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, yeah.
All right, questions.
I got a couple things on my mind. The first one is not about the X's and O's so much, but it's something that's kind of intriguing me lately, and I thought you'd have some good perspective with your decades of coaching, and that is relating to players. How far do you go I don't know how to phrase it. How close do you get to your players, and how do you open doors, with them? I mean, are there certain conversation topics you stay away from? Or, I mean, I have kids, teenage kids, and they just shut me out. But my players,
right?
I'd like to know kind of what buttons to push to make them, open up a little bit. I mean, I know I can't be anybody but who I am, but.
Right. That's a tough one, to be honest with you. So yeah, so because you want to, yes, you definitely need to figure out what buttons to push to make them to make them tick. I do a lot of listening, to be honest with you. And a lot of the stuff I hear is just, you know, me rebounding for them, me listening to them in the gym beforehand, me and, you know, down there when they're in the basement at a, you know, when they come over for a team dinner or something, and I'm just sitting, I hear more that way. How can I help them? You know, what's important to them? So I can kind of figure, because the teenage mind's a lot different than my mind is now. So that's one thing I do a lot of. The second thing is I try to do things that are not basketball related. So fun things that are not basketball related, because then they'll open up more at that point and they let their guards down, like if they're playing laser tag or you take them to a water park or something like that. That's an easier way to figure out which buttons to push and which ones not. Because at that point, you don't really have anything. There's no plus minus at that point. You know, even going out to dinner and stuff, if you get them all at a table, you can, they let their guards down fast, especially teenage boys. So I found that to be very useful. Does that make sense?
How do you get into their world, though? I mean, how much effort do you make?
I don't try to get into their world too much, to be honest with you. I have them teach me about their world whenever I can, you know, with like Snapchat and those kind of things. You know, when I started on Twitter, I had no idea, and some of them taught me about it. So when they can teach me something about their world, that's always helpful. So that would be the biggest thing. You know, is when they can teach you something, then you can kind of get a glimpse into their world. But as their coach, I only need so much. I only need a couple pieces of that kind of information, to be honest with you. And it's kind of like you're being a spy, not a spy per se, but you're just kind of delving into figuring out what makes them tick.
And, you know, like to be kind of blunt about it, I mean, from a coaching standpoint, how much do you care if they like you? Are you just their basketball coach? And
that's a great question. I think respect is obvious. In my opinion, respect is earned over time. If they're going to go to battle for you, I'm not saying they have to love you, but they got to like you.
right.
They don't have to love you, but they got to like you enough. Same with your teammates. That's why all the team bonding stuff's good, because it's harder not to like the guy next to me if I'm kind of semi-friends. They're not going to be friends with all the teammates, and that's never going to happen. What was the question again? I've had a brain fart there.
No, it's all right. I was just wondering how much it means to you for them to.
Oh, going back to the So I had a brain fart there. So going back. So this is the time of year that I try to build those kind of relationships more. And I've said that 1,000 times. It's like I got to be able to basically deposit stuff in the bank now. So during the season, I can pull out things that. You know, I can be tougher on them because they know I'm in their corner, because they've spent, you know, 6 weeks with me in a gym and done fun stuff with me and that kind of stuff. So all my great teams, I deposited a lot in the off season. It's like a bank. I deposited in, we did fun stuff. And then when it got tough and I had to be, you know, Papa Bear at that point, then I can draw out, you know, from that bank. So, I got plenty of friends. I don't need more friends. I just need, you know, there's going to be ones that like you, and there's going to be ones that love you, and there's going to be ones that, but they got to all respect you, and you got to all kind of be on that. We're all trying to do the same thing. And then to be honest with you, as they get older and they look back, they'll have more of it, to be honest with you, as long as you do everything fair and honest and that kind of stuff, you know? The two guys that are going to be drafted tonight or tomorrow, I was hard on when they were in high school, but you know, I'm texting them today and saying good luck and you know, blah, blah, blah. So, it's just as hard on them as anybody.
Okay. Thank you. The other question I had is, No, I'm sure it varies all over the map, but it feels like, in your decades of experience, where I'm leading into is, addressing guys post game.
Yep.
Are you?
They never hear you. Pre-game's great. They always hear you in pregame. Like, we lost the first time in the second round of playoffs this year in a really long time. And I think my post-game speech was 40 seconds. And then the next day, they heard me for like 45 minutes because human nature is when something bad happens or they lose or something like that, they just tune out. So I'm always after – and they'll listen better after a win than after a loss. No matter what game, what level, when. But after losses, they're thinking about, I didn't get enough shots. I didn't, I didn't play very well, whatever it is. They're never thinking about what I'm saying at that point. So I do post game very small.
It's not the best time to break it down.
It isn't. It's like the timeout theory. The timeout theory is tell them three things. The most important thing you should say three times. So you're basically saying five things. The most important thing you should start with and end with, and the other stuff you can throw, but they really only remember one thing in a timeout. It's similar to the post game. I say, hey, great season, or hey, this was a tough loss. Let's talk about it tomorrow. Go home, see your parents, blah, blah, blah. And then you can come back the next day and before like I've done that. We've had 45-minute film sessions or 20-minute in the gym, no balls, just talking. And then they're listening to me. It's like, well, why did we lose yesterday? Well, we all had time to think about it. Blah, 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 blah. What could we do better? Blah, blah, blah. And then I have their attention. It's like, okay, that makes sense to me, coach. The other one is like, and don't get me wrong, I've had long speeches before, but they just never work. They look like zombies at that point.
Yeah, because I've always been, I haven't coached that long, and when I'm talking to them, they're looking all over the place.
They don't want to listen to you at all. But let's say you played on a Saturday, or let's say you played on a Saturday and then your next practice was on a Monday. When you come in on Monday and you sit them down for 5 minutes, that 5 minutes will be more effective than anything you say after a loss. They just won't hear you.
Yeah.
They don't have time to digest it too.
No, that's great. Cause I even take it to the point where, I have them, because they're looking all over the gym, I just have them face me, face the wall, so that I at least get their attention. And, they probably don't like that. But
I'm watching Ball in the Family, which is the Mello, Jello, the ball. Anyway, and Mello's, I think Mello's 16 or whatever. And I just watched an episode where he lost, and then he was on his phone after the game in Lithuania. It's like, oh my God, that's just such a 16-year-old. It's not a 20. He's a professional, but he's a 16-year-old professional. He's not a 22-year-old professional. It's like, oh my God, that's such a professional thing to do. 16-year-old thing to do. I mean,
sure, but
yeah. Just
My thought process was, if I don't hit it now, they won't remember.
Will you remember?
I'll remember.
Yeah, then that's all that matters, because then you can bring it back up to them.
Okay.
A teenage brain, trust me, from someone that's taught for 30 years, a teenage brain is a crazy cookie. And, especially in the world we live in now. So you're better off just cutting your losses at that point and then coming back. And then they'll, it's the same when I give a test in class and they'll bomb it. I'll say something when I pass it back, but then the next day I'll come back and say, hey, why did we do this? Why did we not do well? Blah, blah, blah. And then I have their more of their attention because they went home. Mom and dad saw it. They saw it. They thought about it. There's some processing going in. So it's like you got to almost let them process it first. And they won't say anything, but they are processing it. All from different angles, from the individual angle, from the team angle, from the, all that stuff.
Okay. Okay. A little bit away from the psychology part of things.
It's a lot psychology. Trust me.
Oh my gosh.
I'm telling you, it's as much that as people think I'm crazy. I say, I'm a doctor, I'm a psychologist, but I said, especially teenage boys from 15 to 18, it is, oh my God, it is, the X's and O's are important, but you know, this, the psyche behind them is, that's part of the reason I think I've been relatively successful, is because I can kind of read and understand, ooh, things aren't going well. We need to change the, you know, yeah, it's an interesting cookie.
You probably have a little bit of a side benefit of being involved, engaged in the classroom and seeing
behavior. Yes. Well, and that's where I learned about a lot of lists. I mean, I know stuff going on in that school before other people know what's going on. Yeah. Because you just listen and it's like, yeah, things I don't want to know are going on. Hey, everybody, I hope you're enjoying that. A couple things. First of all, make sure you go and subscribe and like. Those 5-star reviews really do mean a lot to us. Go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. 14-day free trial. That's awesome. We would love if you did that. And again, a shameless plug, if you're thinking of one of those t-shirts I said before, I won't talk about this every time, but earned but not given, and then it's got a ring in the middle. It's kind of cool, I think, working on different colors and stuff. So go over and check it out. I'll put it down in the show notes. And all right, let's go back to our membership call.
Okay. And then one quick thing, this involves the pregame, not the strategy or the addressing the team, but how much, I don't want to say seriousness. I mean, you want to have their game faces on, but the warmups. I mean, I've got what I believe to be a pretty, I wouldn't say intense, but focused and, you know, warm-up drill, because I want them to be almost game-like. And I see other teams just doing the layup lines. And
Yep. I hate layup lines. We do them just to start, but I hate layup lines. We have, because our warm-up has gone to 15 minutes for the varsity during the regular season. And I use very little. So I think warm-ups is extremely important. So you probably get how many, 4 or 5 minutes for a game? Yeah. So I would literally do maybe one layup, maybe a layup on each side, and then I'd be done. And then I would do everything 3-on-3 or 5-on-5. I would just literally try to get as many juices flowing. You could run your out-of-bounds plays. You could run your stuff. Like, you basically got to set the table like, we're going to work. Like, this is, all right, here we go. I don't care if the other team sees, you know, even at my level, I don't care. You should definitely not care. They're not looking at your warm-up. Like, let's run our out-of-bounds play. Let's run this. Let's run that. Who, you know, I don't care. We're going to out-execute them, kind of thing. So I think it's really important. I spend time on it, and I would also practice it. This is our warm-up. You know, maybe it's a day that you're working on some 5-on-5 and you're going to scrimmage. So you go, okay, let's spend 3 minutes. We're going to do our warm-up. Ready? Go. And then right after that, you go into your, you know, what, maybe you're working on 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 or whatever on your offense, or working on trapping or something in the full court. Yep. So you move from that. Yep. We're focused for 3 minutes. We're going to do the warm-up. Let's go. We're going to play. So everything is, like, again, my teaching thing. You want to show them, and then you want to do it so they can kind of see that that's the way it's going to go. And then it just becomes a habit. Like, okay, you know, we played our third game today or whatever. let's do our warm-up. Let's play the game. Let's do our warm-up. Let's play the game. You know, we can do that no matter where we go. And I think that helps a lot.
Okay. And then I watched with interest your when you're talking to Rick Torbett.
Yeah, he's a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I purchased his video. It's fairly lengthy, but I think I digested all of it. And it's the kind of thing I'm bringing forth with my team, and, you know, working through that. And some of the concerns, the questions you had were insightful and, you know, hit home. But
complicated. I mean, I made fun of Rick, but it's like layer 37 of the read. It's like, oh my God, Rick, you don't know what you're dealing with. I mean, it's like, we're not you. we got to simplify this thing.
There's kind of a label on just a lot of simple things, really. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's a label on a lot of things that when I played, we just did. It wasn't called read-react. It was just
playing,
give and go.
Right.
go back door, whatever. But
yeah. And I think his, I think the read and react and what he was talking about in that video in the community is that he has basically taught the game the way it's being taught played now, where he's spreading it out and people are either going to the rim or they're shooting threes. You know, his offense isn't really set up for that mid range at all.
No.
And that's the way the game's moved. You know, you better be able to shoot the three or attack the rim.
Yeah, it's north south. It's not east west so much.
Nope, not at all.
Which is kind of interesting. It's hard to some degree in youth. I mean, even to get to the basket, I mean, you got guys waiting for you.
Oh, I know. And they'll take the charge. In the youth, it's even worse. It's like, might as well flip a coin on whether they're going to call something or what they're going to call. Unless it's changed since I was down there with my son. Maybe, but it's like, oh, my God.
No, they beat each other up.
Yeah, it's physical.
My question I have really with regard to that is, I've observed what, you know, what that offense dictates in terms of the post.
Mm-hmm.
The post around to different spots, and you have these Laker cuts and
– Yep.
On and on. But actually last weekend I was in a tournament and, you know, because we're pretty limited with our practice times, this team threw a zone up. I have no idea why. I haven't seen too many of those in the last few years in summer, AU ball, but, and you know, my guys, we're talking 14U and, you know, they're not quite instinctual, how to navigate through a zone and just instinctually hit gaps and stuff. And it's hard to diagram up when you get, you know, a couple of timeouts in a game.
Right.
And,
yep.
But with a read-react mentality, I mean, I'm trying to go back to his videos. I don't even know if he even attempts to address it. But as far as positioning players and just
– Well, I would stay in the five out, and I would automatically cut to the basket. And then I would have the second guy, especially in 14U, I'd have the second guy cut too. Because zones don't like when people move through them and they don't like a lot of movement. So if I was at the top of the key and I pass it to the wing, I'd have him cut, put his head below the rim, and then I would have the next guy cut. So the guy that has the ball would actually – and then they would fill the positions. So a lot of cutting, more than screening, more than anything else. And then what I've done in the past, too, is I've put somebody into the high post, which isn't something Rick does. But if you put somebody in the high post and then kind of move off that person in the high post and then they can pop or they can seal and curl to the basket, has worked. The best way to beat a zone is to be able to shoot the ball. But movement through it out of the read and react does work really well.
Because the zones tend to be, you know, top heavy because the players have a hard time getting the ball in the second layer.
Yes.
So they have a 1-3-1 and they just smother everything, and including some of that high post passing. It's hard to get it done.
It is. And that's why if you get guys cutting to the basket, that or dribbling toward the basket. But then again, it's usually that's what they want you to do. But, you know, attacking off that will help a lot, I think.
Okay. And
I mean, there's all sorts of zone offenses, and you know, we have a couple of them and stuff, but if you want to stay purely read and react, that's what I would do.
And would that be, and I know it'd be situational, but just, would you tend to have that post player high or low?
High. It depends if they can shoot high, 'cause then they could pop to the three. If not, you know, free throw line to mid post. And then what I've done, even in it's been a while, like 12U, 13U, I've had a guy that just basically works the paint area and works the short corner area. And I just say, you go find an open spot. If you see open space, you cut. And so, again, the zone is worried about that person cutting all the time. I said, you are literally they don't play ping pong anymore or pinball anymore. But I said, you're moving and finding an open spot. And if you're there, again, hard pass, passing the post is hard against the zone. You know, my rule is it has to be a bounce pass kind of thing. But that helps too. If you got, especially if you're smaller and you got an athletic big, boom, you just find open space that, and then we're going to get you the ball. And if they double you, kick it back out, we'll shoot a three. If not, attack kind of thing. Because, again, that zone doesn't like when that guy's moving around a lot in the paint.
Yeah, that's what I was encouraging him to do. I just need to do more of that.
It's hard because you only got a couple of days of practice, too. That's the hard. Yeah. I mean, it's not like me during a regular season where I got 5 days and, all right, somebody's in a zone and we can do this. So that's why you got to make it as simple as possible.
Yeah.
In the summer and stuff. And then you only practice a couple of days a week. It's like, here's your two rules for zone. All right, let's try it, you know. Blah, blah,
blah. Yep. Okay. I noticed one of your videos, you know, and of course there's lots of these too, but, you know, press breaks. And what I've put in, interestingly, first tournament, to my shock and awe, we were impressed. But part of that had to do with we have a pretty, you know, fast team, and we got the ball in and ran, and it couldn't get it set up. But
that's a theory with presses. You know, that's the whole color part. You get the ball in before you can set it up. Because if it's a zone press, it's hard to set up. Like, I've never been able to run. I've had NBA guys, and I've never been able to run a diamond where I could actually on a make be able to set it up before a team could get in. You know, a regular diamond where the guy's on the ball. It's been so hard. It's just, you know, we can move it back and set it up, but it's just.
Wow. But what I did implement, in case, and that's what I wanted you to comment a little bit on, was, this four cross.
Yep.
You showed
or sideline, or I'd run sideline too.
Sideline
press break. Especially if you're quick.
What do you mean by sideline?
I'll show you. Okay. Let's see if I can pull it up. Let's see if I can do this fast. So sideline press break, guy taking it out is up here. Okay, so then I have these two guys. So we'll call this three, and we'll call him four. So they're, I don't set them up low. I set them up at like elbow and a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. And then there's two guys at half court, one there and one here. All right, so especially if you're quick, what I do is I have this guy go deep and kind of curl back in. These two set of the three sets of screen, he cuts to the sideline. This is where the name comes from.
Yep.
Cuts sideline, and then he comes up. So this is better against a man press. So this guy will always be open. We'll call him one because that's usually your point guard. And then this guy comes around after he passes it and goes here. You will be able to break any man press with sideline, guaranteed. Because they're all, think about where the defenders are. There's going to be a defender here. There's going to be a defender on the ball. There's going to be a defender here. There's going to be a defender here. And this guy doesn't want to get beat deep, right?
Right.
So to be here. So he's going to be able to catch the ball. This guy knows where he's going. This one has no idea where he's going. So as soon as he catches it, he pivots, he goes, and you're off to the races.
And then what would be the general profile of the player taking it out? I mean, do you want that,
these are your guards. These two are your guards. This is one, and this would be like your two. This would be three, and this would be four, and this would be your five right here. That's normally the way it works.
Oh, so you have your one at half.
I do. And no one's ever expecting that. Sometimes I'll have the one throw it in too. So one and two are interchangeable. So if I want one to get the ball back, then I'll have one here and I'll have two down here. Two will catch it. They're athletic. They'll be able to pivot, and then ones will get it off the dribble. So either way, I know that these two are now over here, right? They're over here on the sideline. This whole space right in here is wide open.
Okay.
So it's perfect against man to man. Against a zone, the 1-4 set, it's all about those diagonal cuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you try that?
Yeah, I mean it. Well, that's what I've mapped out for us to use against either. But I'm just concerned. I mean, as I'm thinking about man to man, that there's just too many guys in that area.
Yep. So I would do what I was talking about with that one four set. I would do that more against the zone. So if you let, you know, and you can have these two screen, it doesn't have to be an exactly a one four set. So you can have these two like this, because again, no one wants to get beat deep, but if they're in a zone, it's not as big a deal. So usually I run the 1-4 against a zone. So this person's throwing it in, they got the one under the basket. And then as soon as the ball goes here, all these cuts straight across are virtually impossible to defend.
Really? Okay.
When you diagonal cut across the face, because where's the defender? He can't be on this side because I'm going to just go deep.
Yep.
So he's going to be on this side of me, right? Yep. He's not going to be there. He's going to be here. Well, when I diagonal cut again, so we work on press breaking because this has been an issue for us probably for 3 or 4 years. We work on press breaking all the time. And we do it with no dribbles, and we work on diagonal cuts across. And we'll do 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 3-on-4, all that kind of stuff in practice. And they like it because then once they get past half court, I let them go and just play. Mm-hmm. They kind of like the drill. But I said, you got to try to catch the ball, you know, above the free throw line on the press break, and then there's no dribbles. And then once you get the ball inside the three-point line on the other end, you can just play. So that, but you got to cut, and if you just stand, you're not gonna get open.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm counting to 10 and stuff. So, and again, I don't know how much summer ball's changed in the last 3 or 4 years, but it seems like pressure is a big thing in summer ball. Everyone presses. Everybody wants to.
Yep, you know, it's a big thing because if you got athletic guys, you just want to pour on the points by getting steals, and I mean, some of them don't have any offenses. They just want.
It's correct. It's the law of large numbers. If I'm better than you, I want more possessions.
Yep.
If I'm not as good as you, I want less possessions. Yep. So they want speed. They want up and down. So, again, that's where you talk to the boys. Well, if we get a layup, fine, but then let's come down. And if they're, you know, especially if a team's zoning you and they're not as good as you, then okay. We'll just take some time off the clock.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that other one you described, I'm glad you brought that to my attention because I actually used that a little bit last year, and it was effective when I passed to that, I'll just call it the weak side guy coming forward.
Yeah.
We handed off to the guy sprinting.
On the other side. Yeah, I call it sideline. I don't know.
Yeah, and he was open a lot.
A lot. It's all about positioning. I'm convinced of that in basketball, too. It's like if you find the cut or the position that works, then it's like a secret sauce, but it's like 30 years and I found 6 of them, you know, it's kind of that thing. But when they work, they really work.
Yeah. It seems like you would have had the athletes that they probably wouldn't even press you that much.
Yeah, it's kind of gone. Definitely in our heyday stretches, you know, this year's team, they press more. You know, they'll press us again next year. It just depends on the teams, you know, how many ball handlers you have and stuff.
Sure. Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Anything else, Coach?
No, it was just a little refreshing to hear during your talk with Torbett, you know, about some difficulties you have with moving people in what would seem to be natural, you know, guys passing and not cutting or, you know, to hear that's happening, you know, even at your level.
Oh, it's crazy.
I'm a little bit surprised, but, you know.
And we work on it every day. Yeah. That offense to run that offense well is harder than people think. It looks easy, but the kids, I don't know, they don't play like we used to play. They just don't play the games, you know, just pick up and that kind of stuff. It's either, you know, in a gym or something like that. Yeah, well, I mean, we're still tweaking it. You know, I talked to Rick a while ago, and we're going to get back together in another month or two, and he's going to get on a whiteboard because as soon as my assistant coaches heard it, it was like, oh, crud, we have all these questions. So we're going to get him in a whiteboard, and I'll send out to the community if anybody has questions too because we're going to try that whole drafting thing he was talking about. I think that intrigued us. We're not 100% sure what I know what he means, but it's like, okay, how does this work within the offense? And it was really hard for him to pick his favorite cuts or favorite two things. But he knows that it's kind of like the surgeon. The surgeon knows how to do the brain surgery, but then they know it so well. He knows it so well that it's like, you're just at a different level than the rest of us. the rest of us are just trying to get them to their five spots, you know, and then we become very predictable. That's my issue when we talk next time. Our mm-hmm. offense becomes very, it's like a pass, and then we do the same thing every time.
Mm-hmm.
I got to break them of that routine is our hope.
Yeah, because I showed this group a lot of those things, probably too many of them, whatever layers he talks about,
yep.
drafting and you know, all these things. And I think the kids were a little overwhelmed with – and then when I had them scrimmage, I saw maybe two of those things happen.
One or two. That's what I'm saying. So I think you got to – and what we're going to do next year is we're going to pick one and we're going to work on that one. We're working on drafting today. And that's all we're going to do. I mean, it's like we almost got to build it like he says, you know. And then when we get good at this, we go to the next one. It's like we learn to add, then we learn to subtract, and then we learn to multiply. Because I think you're right. Our brains work like we should be able to do these three things from the start. Well, that's not the way they play. So
yeah, I mean, when I played or pick up and, you know, we want to stay on the – you had to do more than one thing.
Right, right.
Because guys even watching to wait to play you next.
Yeah, they would know.
They would know that you can only do, you know,
one or two.
They're three. Up against quickly.
Right.
But, okay.
All right. Thanks, Coach. We'll do this again.
Thank you.
We'll do it again. Sure. All right. See ya. Bye.
Bye. Cubs won.
Everybody, I hope you like that. Subscribe, like, stop that treadmill, pull the car over to the side. We would really appreciate that. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. I think we all want to get better. All right. Almost through the entire week. Have a great week, everybody.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.